I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a wide gap between the numbers of men who go out into the outdoors for recreation versus the numbers of women who do the same. When it comes to hiking, the National Institutes of Health states that only 25% of women account for the number of hikers. A new book has been written to encourage women. It's called A Woman's Guide to the Wild. It's a handbook for women to take their place in the outdoors. Its author, Ruby McConnell, joins me now, and I'll get her to discuss why she wrote it and what's in it. There's a lot that's useful, whether a guide on what to bring or what to eat, how to navigate, and how to have sex in the outdoors, too. There's also a look at how to survive, especially on how to deal with women's unique needs. Ruby McConnell is a writer, dancer, and geologist based out of Eugene, Oregon. Her website is at rubymcconnell.com, and the Twitter handle is at rubygonewild. She is a 2016 recipient of the Oregon Literary Arts Fellowship. The book is published by Sasquatch Books. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Vancouver today, Ruby McConnell. Ms. McConnell, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, as I told you just before we started, I'm not an outdoorsy person. Camping, hiking, those sorts of things were never things I did growing up or do now. So I haven't read many guidebooks that have been published heretofore. But what struck me in reading your book is just the sexism that women encounter, you know, from this genre of books. I mean, they're not targeting women or considering women at all, are they?
No. In fact, most women, even within the outdoor industry, questioned. When I go to interview them for the book itself, many of the women in the book said, "I have no idea why you're writing this. I don't know why we might need a book for ourselves." And by the end of the interview, they were like, "Well, you're right, this is different and this is different."
Yeah.
So there's a real mindset shift that needs to happen, just in terms of, you know, recognizing that the same gender differences, as slippery as a thing of gender might be, in the post-millennium, they do exist, and that they exist outside just as much as they exist in the rest of our lives.
And in terms of writing the book and having spent time in the outdoors, I mean, you have dealt with a lot of condescension from men, haven't you?
I have, particularly in the world of professional geology consulting. You know, I was a young woman when I finished my graduate degree, and I came into the consulting world sort of wide-eyed and not ready to be, you know, working on drill rigs and things like that. And sort of the first thing that would say when that they would say when I would get to the site was, "Oh, well, I was told that they were going to send a geologist, not half a geologist."
And so what does that do for you in terms of your choice of field and just participating with sorts of these sorts of people? I mean, I guess you have to if it's your job, but I mean, how do you change the conversation, if you will? I mean, do you think about doing that in the course of your work?
You know, there's a couple of ways that you can look at it. Certainly, you can get into conflict everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of battle it back on a day-to-day verbal basis. My choice was to embrace the culture that was already there and to find my place in it. And one of the ways that I did that was by making sure that my skill set was really where it needed to be, so that I could be really self-reliant and really self-confident and understand what my needs were and make sure that I could get my work done. And that's part of where the motivation to write this book came from, because you don't have to play someone else's game if you're already self-sufficient.
Right, right. Well, what was your own experience in the outdoors like, say, growing up? I mean, did you grow up in this part of the you live in Oregon, but in the Pacific Northwest, say? Was that where you grew up?
I did. I grew up in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, Portland is still a relatively small city, but it's got some great outdoor areas that are really accessible. Forest Park in Portland, Oregon is massive, and it's a great source for urban hiking. I also spend a lot of time at really rustic summer camps, and then also working at outdoor school and things like that. And really felt like I got the best of both worlds. I grew up in a city, but also as sort of an outdoors person, because that's just part of the day-to-day lifestyle in Portland. So it's hard for me to remember sometimes that that's not a part of everyone's day-to-day experience as a kid.
Mm.
And that really you do, I think like with anything else, if there's a lot of unknowns, there comes a lot of fear and anxiety. So I wanted to address those things, too.
Yeah, and I guess Portland is a lot similar to, say, Seattle, and Seattle's a little similar to Vancouver in that we are these metropolis places, but yet the proximity to the wild is close, right?
Absolutely, you know, and I think that you raised that great point. You know, I'm in Vancouver today, and it is so spectacular. And to me, you know, the mountains are so close, and the water is so close that it calls to me, and I hope that it calls to everyone else and feels really, really inviting. And I think that even if you don't come from a city that it is quite so spectacular or in your face, that you know, you wake up in the morning and you hear the natural world breaking through the hum of the city, and that in its own way it sort of calls to people in those cities too.
So I'm sure it calls to a lot of women, but a lot of women don't act on it, and I'm curious to know what are some of the concerns that women raised with you in terms of why they don't, say, take advantage of what's out there.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of theories around what I think the barriers are to women participating in the outdoor activities as much as men do. Some of which is the hazing that we sort of talked about. You know, you get the bear myth around menstruation, which I am hoping is not pervasive in Canada.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, is that true that menstruation attracts bears in the woods?
Absolutely not. It stems from two women in Glacier National Park that were attacked by a bear decades ago. And that was sort of thrown out as like a first guess as to why. But there's been numerous studies. There's an entire web page devoted to the debunking of this myth in the National Park Service website. But it's this really robust and pervasive thing that I think really makes women feel like they cannot go outside for 25% of their lives because they're either going to endanger themselves or endanger someone else. But really, you know, the whatever meat you're roasting on the fire, or you know, whatever other human body function odors get produced, are just as attractive to animals as anything else. So there's that sort of thing. I also know that in the States, our young women don't have the coming of age rituals that are connected to the outdoors in the way that our young men do. And again, I don't know if there's a cultural difference there. I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
But in the States, it's a real problem. Our young women, for coming-of-age rituals, are taken to beauty parlors, and our young men are taken out on hunting trips.
Yeah.
There's a big difference there. And then also women come with, you know, we are caretakers of both the younger generation and the older generation. And then there's also some safety issues, some personal safety issues that I don't think a lot of men have. I don't think they have the same level of anxiety at a parking area, at a trailhead, that a woman might.
Yeah, or just even at walking through the neighborhood at night.
Right.
The concerns that you would, say, raise with a daughter as opposed to a son.
Exactly.
Walking through the same neighborhood at night. I'll just throw out some of these misconceptions, and then you can debunk them, because I think that's what you do throughout the book. That women might not be able to carry as much when they're packing. Carrying their pack, or the worst stereotype, that they pack too much.
Right, and again, you know, everyone is capable of overpacking. Everyone is capable of underpacking.
Right.
A good packing list fixes that problem. And the argument of women might not be able to carry as much is actually a valid one. But if you look at a 5'3", 5'4" woman as opposed to a 6 foot tall man, he's also going to require more food and more water. All of his gear, his clothing, is going to take up more space and be heavier to carry. So, in fact, women may not need to carry as much weight as men, because we may, in fact, not require the calories and have a smaller pack to begin with. So it sort of equalizes itself.
And you have a great guide in the book as to the things that one needs, that one, you know, whether it's a short hike or a long hike or a long camping trip or a short one.
Right.
How far you go into the woods also factors into what you'll need.
Absolutely.
Well, the idea of navigation, because, you know, we hear stereotypes, you know, perpetuated about that, about how women find places and men find places, as, you know, with or without maps and the sort. I mean, did you find there's a difference in how women navigate?
Absolutely. And this was so striking, to me when I was still in graduate school, and then after when I was still teaching, when I would teach navigation and I would teach map work in geology classes, the language that women were using, and again, these are all stereotypes. Yeah. The women were using very different language. So I use my mom and dad as the perfect example. If I ask my father for directions, he will tell me go 0.7 miles north on, you know, Smith Road, mm-hmm. turn east and go a quarter mile. You know, I mean, he'll give me all of this. And my mom, if you ask her for the same directions, will say, go up the hill until you see the swimming pool on the right.
Right.
Take a left.
Yeah.
She'll do it totally by landmarks and as opposed to directions. And there's nothing wrong with either one of those ways of navigating. And in fact, a hybrid method is probably the most effective. But women tend to fall on one side and men on the other. But if navigation is always being taught by men, it can feel off-putting to women. And I really felt like I tried to fight a stereotype with a stereotype, because there's a stereotype that women, you know, can't use maps, but then there's also the stereotype of women in the malls and shoes and things. And I just thought, well, I've never seen a girlfriend not be able to find her favorite shoe store in the mall using the map, so we must be able to do it. It's just a matter of context.
Yeah, yeah. We all know how to get there. It's just we use different ways to get there, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this idea of glamping, I hear that word a lot. What is that?
Glamping is kind of an unfortunate term for something that really isn't all that bad in reality. I mean, so glamping is glamour camping. And when I think of glamour camping or glamping, I sort of think of how Paris Hilton or someone might go off and do camping, or I think of the way that they camped in Agatha Christie movies, you know, with a caravan of people and
right.
a large tent and all of that. But really, glamping can be anything, any kind of camping that sort of is the opposite extreme of all I'm carrying with me is, like, you know, water and a knife, sleeping on the bare ground. And I think that to some degree, most people need a little bit of glamping, you know, anything from a nice drink at the end of the day to a really good meal to an extra layer of bed padding. You know, these are creature comforts that people don't want to give up, and I think it ends up keeping them from being outside, when in fact, if you just go ahead and say, a little bit of glamping is all right, you may very well want to stay an extra night.
Well, what about, you must have encountered women who insist on maintaining whatever beauty regimen they have and having to lug around all of their makeup gear, if you will. Can that still happen in the outdoors? I mean, if say, one wants to maintain a certain level of makeup when they're outdoors? I mean, can they do that?
Well, I mean, yeah. And this is a thing that I find strange, too. You know, we spend so much time reinforcing the beauty standard to mainstream women, you know, and so much of our lives are tied up in that visual presentation of ourselves. But then the moment that we go outside, we're expected to have the high self-esteem and the self-respect and all of that courage and grace to just let that completely fall apart, even though it runs against all of our day-to-day messaging and training that we have. So, you know, I think your full hair and makeup is probably, you know, that you're not going to be able to plug anything in, so you got to put the curling iron down. I mean, there's some reasonable things that you're going to have to let go of. But I don't think that there's any reason that you can't wear, you know, some basic makeup if it makes you feel better. I go hiking with eyeliner on and, you know, lip gloss all the time because that happened to be what I was wearing when I left the house that day, or because it's automatic for me to put it on in the morning, and I don't really think anything about it, and I don't think that it diminishes my ability to hike.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
think my eyeliner is holding me back. I think, yeah, there's a possibility it will run, and okay, you know.
So just as it'll run if you're in the rain or something like that, I'm sure, right?
Right, and you just sort of, you know, fix it. And I actually had a woman last week in Portland telling me that she hadn't actually gone camping in 20 years because 20 years ago she had a river guide make fun of her in front of the group for wearing makeup, and she never went camping again.
So there are things that men can do.
Oh, yeah.
To better encourage women to get out more.
Yes. And I think that the first thing is recognizing that everyone has needs and everyone has different kinds of expectations and things that they want from their outdoor experience. So in my experience, certainly when I was younger and less able to articulate and my needs and advocate for myself or even identify what those things might be, you know, maybe I would be taken out by a boyfriend that was really into, you know, climbing to the top of steep things and sort of conquering, you know, that climb or mount, you know, climbing to the top of a mountain. And over time, I discovered that, you know, my knees, they really don't like ascents and descents, especially if they're really, really steep. But in the early days, I didn't really realize that it was just my knees that were bothering me. I thought there was something wrong with me or that I wasn't adventurous enough because my male counterparts were telling me that.
Mm.
So rather than hearing my knees hurt, you know, what they were hearing was, I'm a girl and I can't keep up. And that's what they would reflect back to me. Whereas instead, it would have been okay for them to say, I'm really invested in doing this climb. If you're not invested in it, let's split up for a couple of hours and we can meet back at the campsite, both fulfilled and happy, and have a great meal together. It's as simple as that.
There are a lot of all women hiking clubs that are coming up now, is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is in response to this very phenomenon where
yeah.
women are starting to get more and more interested in it, especially in adventure sports, and they're being shut out of the game. And they want to learn in an environment that's a little bit more encouraging and a little less competitive. So they're looking for those groups. And with social media, it's so much easier to meet up with people now with similar interests. I think it's a really exciting phenomenon that's taking place.
You've got some great advice, regardless of gender, when it comes to protecting oneself. You know, I wrote this down as I was reading the book. Be confident and trust your instincts. I think a lot of us don't trust our instincts when we're outdoors or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We just assume that we need to follow whatever guide we've been told or instructions we've been told. But I mean, your instincts do play an important part, don't they?
Absolutely. And sometimes that's all you have,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And it can just be, you know, a lot of times when we're outside, I think we have this message that we are supposed to be brave and also that we are supposed to be, you know, quote unquote, successful and complete the task. And you watch brave, well-trained, smart people you know, die on Everest every year because they are not able to turn around when they should turn around, you know, and we let things like ego get in the way of really just looking at the sky and going, I know what a foreboding cloud looks like.
Right. Yeah.
I know what a rain cloud looks like, you know, and I know that is coming towards me. And we just sort of ignore that. My favorite example is I was hiking once, and all of these frogs in a place where I had never seen frogs started appearing, and they were all jumping into the water. And I just kept thinking, oh, it's so strange, all these frogs. And my brain would not allow me to register that there was something about to happen. And sure enough, I got caught in a massive electrical storm.
Mm.
And so now when I see something like that, I take pause and go, what information am I really receiving here?
Now, the chapter on sex in the outdoors, I'm sure that's getting a lot of attention from people. I mean, they must ask you about that when you're doing interviews like this.
You know, it's true. It turns out, I mean, I wrote both that and the menstruation section and just sort of didn't think anything about it and
yeah.
thought, oh, I think it's odd that people don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out people really don't talk about it.
And now they want to, right? Yeah.
And now they want to. And there's been a really quite loud and positive response to, I guess, what's just me being really honest about something that I think that happens a lot outside and really is actually a health issue. And I consider it a first aid issue because, you know, women can come back with really severe bladder infections. You know, from sex, if you're dirty and sweaty and things like that. And just like any other care of our body, we need to make sure that we understand, you know, what we're getting into when we're outside, you know, just as much as anywhere else. But yeah, there's a frankness to my book that, you know, I mean, I grew up going to Catholic school. It wasn't sort of ingrained in me to be so frank.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I think it was long overdue in the outdoor community, and I think that there's a humanness to it, which is what I was trying to bring to all of these issues, that people can relate to. You know, it can be awkward, and you know, you do forget to turn the light off in the tent and give the people at the next campsite a show. I mean, these things happen.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I'm sure after people have now read the book, they must be telling you things that must be surprising as the author of the book. And have you encountered a lot of feedback from people who've read the book?
I get a lot of emails from women that share experiences mostly about being caught unprepared and not realizing how unprepared they were until they were outside and something happened. People who get, you know, separated from husbands, or who, you know, who were out on what they thought was going to be an easy hike and got in over their heads. The feedback has been really overwhelming to me, actually, at how much women were looking for this book. I had that personal experience. That's why I wrote the book, because I kept sort of going out and getting frustrated and coming back and going, there must be a book for this.
What are your summer plans?
So my summer plans are, I'm in BC right now. I'm doing the Oregon Country Fair, which I do every year, which is a great festival, in the woods in Vineta, Oregon. And then I'm hoping to get out to Hell's Canyon. I've been, turned back, just by logistical stuff for the last couple of years. I always like to spend a lot of time in Oregon's high desert in the summer, because they have really wonderful lava lands. And then because we're seeing warmer and warmer weather, as August comes in, I'll probably spend a lot of time at the coast this year. I'm used to the Pacific Northwest cool. This heat is kind of amazing to me. So,
you know, when we think of Oregon, we only think of Portland, say.
Yes.
But I mean, it's just a state that's much more than that, right?
Yeah, you know, what's amazing about Oregon is that in the course of about 4.5 hours, you can drive from the ocean into tropical, temperate rainforest in our coast range, down into agricultural valleys, up into the high mountains of the Cascades, and then out into the desert in a straight line across the state. So you get all of those different biomes and all of those different landscapes in the course of just a few hours drive. So anything that you're looking for in Oregon, you know, if you're looking for water or sun or snow, you get pretty much year round, especially in central Oregon, where I live. So, we say in 4.5 hours, but really from most places in Oregon, you are half an hour away from really spectacular outdoor opportunities. It's a really wonderful place to be.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, I've been to Portland a few times, and well, I love it for the book. So I'm usually in bookstores, but I ought to look outside more and get out more, I suppose. This book is a great place to start in terms of the conversations we need to have. And so congratulations on it, and good luck with it, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
The website for more, rubymcconnell.com, the Twitter handle, @RubyGoneWild. The book is called A Woman's Guide to the Wild. It's from Sasquatch Books. Its author, Ruby McConnell, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.